This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The Los Angeles Police Commission cleared officers involved in the killing of a black woman named Riedel Jones this week. The commission voted 3-0 that Jones's killing was justified because her, quote, actions while armed with a knife presented an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury. Members of Black Lives Matter Los Angeles have been attending police commission meetings for weeks demanding justice for Jones's death and holding up signs with her name on it. On Tuesday, when the commission vote was announced, protests swelled into the hundreds and activists marched and demonstrated into the evening. A smaller group decided to spend the night in front of the commission building. Riedel Jones was among 36 people shot by Los Angeles police in 2015. So far this year, the department has killed 9 people. Meanwhile, U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch recently recognized the LAPD as a model department, a move heavily protested by Black Lives Matter. The protests in L.A. come amid nationwide demonstrations from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to St. Paul, Minnesota, and beyond. Rising Up producer Anna Buss and I went to L.A. City Hall on Wednesday, and we brought you this report.
My name is Malina Abdullah, and I'm an organizer with Black Lives Matter.
And you're also a professor at Cal State LA?
Yes, I'm also professor and chair of Pan-African Studies at Cal State LA.
Can you first tell me what happened at the police commission meeting yesterday before the demonstrations on Tuesday night? What happened in the commission meeting that prompted you and many others to spend the night?
Yeah, so yesterday the police commission was considering the murder of Riedel Jones. Riedel Jones was killed on August 12th of last year by LAPD. She was a mother of two, a 13-year-old boy, well, he's now 13, and a daughter who's now 7. She was accused of stealing $80 from a pharmacy using a kitchen knife. Riedel Jones stands 4'10" tall. The police apparently were looking for her. She spotted them looking for her maybe an hour or so later in a very residential community in South Los Angeles. And when she spotted them, all witness accounts said she ran, and the police shot her as she was running away from them, and then they left her on the ground, as they often do, left her there behind some buildings, and no one came for hours. No one came for hours. And so we were hoping, as we often find ourselves doing, that police commission would rule that murder out of policy, and that would open things up for the police officers who killed her to be disciplined. But they didn't. They ruled just as they did in the killing of Brother Africa, which we saw on video. They ruled that it was an in-policy death. And so it was a horrific experience, especially for her husband, who bused down here, took a mega bus down from the Bay Area to, for the first time, speak out about it. You know, of course, he and his children are going through a horrible time trying to recover from one of the most horrendous things that anyone can experience. And he came down to really give humanity and lift up her spirit. And he left feeling as if the system cannot give us justice, and so the people have to demand justice. And that's what prompted the demonstration. That's what prompted this occupation here, because who's responsible for this ruling is Matt Johnson and a police commission that's appointed by Mayor Eric Garcetti, as well as a police chief who's also appointed by the mayor, Police Chief Charlie Beck, who leads the police force that kills more of its residents than any other in the entire nation.
So when the police commission made its decision, I understand it was 3-0, so a unanimous decision. How did you and others react? And I understand there were at that point hundreds of activists gathered here outside the commission?
Yeah, so at our high, we had over 1,000 folks outside of LAPD headquarters. The room was filled to capacity. For some reason, they decided to close the overflow room and claim that it was because something else was scheduled for that room. So only about 30 or 40 folks were able to get in. They reserved 2 empty front rows for officers, so the people couldn't fill that up. And so the reaction was one of disappointment, one of a constant feeling that the system that we're supposed to believe is democratic constantly betrays us, and especially black people. And so when we went out and made that announcement, the crowd was outraged. And we thought about who it is that we can hold accountable. And time after time, Mayor Garcetti is refusing to hold those who lead this police department and those who are charged with its oversight. He's refusing to hold them accountable. And so we're saying this time, listen, Mr. Mayor, if you refuse to hold Charlie Beck and this police commission accountable, we're going to hold you accountable.
Now, I understand Attorney General Loretta Lynch was in L.A. recently to point out the LAPD as a model police department nationwide. I understand she wanted to give them some kind of recognition, and you didn't like that.
No, we didn't like that at all. So we showed up to let her know that LAPD kills more people than any other police force in the country. It should be admonished. It should be investigated, not awarded. We know that just as he often does, Mayor Eric Garcetti has left the scene of the crime, quite literally. He is in Washington, D.C. with his co-conspirator, Charlie Beck, trying to make his case to the president and the Department of Justice that this is a model city for policing. And they're using this idea that their use of social media and technology, which we know is used to monitor and surveil protesters who are demanding that our people not be killed by their hands, that's what they use technology and social media for.
Now, this is the third anniversary of the Black Lives Matter movement. Started when George Zimmerman was acquitted of killing Trayvon Martin. 3 years later, do you feel that this movement is growing and becoming more powerful, even though we still haven't had justice for almost anybody's death?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people are really tired of laying down and asking for justice. One clear example I can give is on Sunday, we intended to have our general membership meeting, which usually brings about 100 to maybe 200 people. And we were thinking this was going to be a bigger one. So we thought maybe 300 people.
Because of what's happening in Baton Rouge and St. Paul.
Right. So we anticipated maybe 300 people would show up. We got upwards of 5,000 people showing up. So needless to say, the building was too small. And we wound up having a march and demonstration, lifting up the names of Keisha Michael and Mark Quentin Sandlin, who were the latest victims killed in Inglewood, California. And again, we need to remember that these have real effects on our community. So the death of Mark Quentin Sandlin and Keisha Michael left 7 children without their parents.
So finally, do you think that this occupation here in front of City Hall will continue? And how long will it continue? I understand that on Wednesday night, today's Wednesday, a lot of people are expected to commemorate the third anniversary of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, so we're expecting a huge turnout tonight on Main between First and Temple. We're hoping that folks will come out and celebrate with us Black resilience. And we anticipate being here for the long haul. So we've committed to being here until Garcetti fires Chief Beck.
This movement is led by Black people, but it is also at least... It is also at least somewhat multiracial. How important is it for it to be multiracial?
It's absolutely essential. So we are Black-led, ally-supported. And what that means is that the people who work with us understand that the freedom and liberation of Black people really is necessary for their own liberation. So nobody is free until Black people are free. And the allies that we work with embrace that.
Malina Abdullah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
My name is Jasmine Abdullah, Black Lives Matter. I'm a core organizer as well as the founder.
The police caught you in their crosshairs in terms of your activism, but here you are in front of City Hall. It feels to me like you're refusing to let the police silence you, but I think they would like to silence you. What do you think?
Of course, this is my way of true resistance and resilience. This is my way of saying, no, you can't silence me. Everywhere I go now, even yesterday, one of the police officers said, girl, you're on probation, felony probation.
And so a police officer in Los Angeles, not Pasadena, recognized you and knew what your case was.
Yes, I was just walking down to Starbucks to go use the restroom, and she said, girl, you're on felony probation. I would watch out. So I just explained to her, I'm expressing my freedom of speech. I'm expressing what I feel is wrong. So you could do what you want with that probation, but I'm going to still be here.
So this gathering was in response to the absolving of officers and the killing of Riddell Jones. Riddell Jones is not a name that's as well known around the country. How important is it for us to remind America that black women are often the victims of police violence and also don't get justice for their deaths?
Well, we know that America is a very misogynistic, white, patriarchal, capitalistic system. And black women have always been at the bottom of that system. We have always been used and objectified all of our lives. So we know that it would make America cry if they seen the nurturers and the mothers are being murdered as well. It would make more people stand up. So that's why I feel Riddell Jones' name hasn't been lifted up, because they know that people, when they see a black man, 9 times out of 10, there's no real true emotion and empathy for that black man, even when he gets murdered. But if it was a black woman and they know it was a mother of two, then there's more empathy, there's more hurt. So there's no outcry because they don't want people to know.
How long, and actually, what was Tuesday night like for you? I understand that there were hundreds of people in front of the LA Police Commission meeting. Only a few were let inside. And when the decision came down that the police were basically absolved of her killing, what was it like for you? Can you describe the moment?
Well, once we walked in there, I can already feel that they were not going to find those police out of policy. Why? Because this is the only time that they've ever closed the overflow room. They said that they closed it due to too many reporters, but they had all of the reporters in that first initial room with us. So that already gave me my first hint. And once they kicked out Miss Sheila Hines, which is Waukesha Wilson's aunt slash mother, I knew that something was up. They were trying to get us all out of there because they wanted us to uprise in there. When I got outside and, I got kicked out, Brother Marcus, which is Riddell Jones' husband, he walked outside with Mama Melina and everybody. She said they found him in policy. So everybody started screaming, you know, just screaming and hurting. And
meaning the shooting was justified.
Yeah, it was a justified homicide. So I immediately just started heaving, crying, and pleading, like, why? And I grabbed Marcus, and we just held, and I just said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And folks said I shouldn't have said that, but no, I am sorry. I'm sorry that you have to explain to your children that they will not have their mother. I'm sorry that you have to be a single father. I'm sorry that you have all these things that you're going to. You have to be mommy and daddy now, and that's hard, and that's not fair. And so I'm sorry.
And you've become close to several people who've lost their loved ones to police violence. You mentioned Waukesha Wilson's aunt, but also Kendrick McDade's mother. He was a young man, 19-year-old, shot by Pasadena police. I think, do you feel like we sometimes forget the people who are left behind, those who are grieving, who suffer so much?
Well, yeah, we do leave those behind, those folks behind. We're only there, people are only there for the families when it initially happens. And when I lost my brother, that's what I always remembered. I remember that people were there for the first 2 weeks, and then after the funeral, they were gone. And that's when you need people the most. You need people the most when there's nobody there, you start to think and go into your head, and you start to reminisce. And then for mothers, I know my mother said that it always went through her head what she could have done differently. So, and then as a mom,
they feel guilty.
They feel guilty, you know. They feel that, my mom calls it the shoulda, coulda, wouldas. The shoulda, coulda, wouldas. If I did this, he could have been alive. I should have did this, and he could be here. But truly, no matter what, it was going to happen. It was going to happen.
So how long will you and others stay here in front of City Hall?
Well, I know we're planning on staying here and, until Mayor Garcetti comes back. We're going to demand that he fire Chief Beck. If he does not fire Chief Beck, I think we're going to continue to be out here. People will occupy it. But we're trying to tell him. We're not trying to. We're demanding that he fires him, and if he doesn't, there will be political consequences. So that means that us young folks that you see coming out, and those 4,000 young people that you've seen in Inglewood, we're going to vote against, well, not vote for Mayor Garcetti. So,
how connected is what's happening in LA to what's happening in Baton Rouge, what's happening in St. Paul, New York, so many different cities around in Atlanta, around the country? It feels like this isn't just a local struggle.
Well, no, this is not just a local struggle. This is not just the United States. This is a global, international struggle. We know that dark-skinned folks around the world have it harder, struggle harder. We know that in Afghanistan, we know that in Mexico, we know that if you are a morena or a moreno, you are not on noticias, you are not on novelas, you're not on any of those things. You are persecuted and prosecuted for being black.
So white supremacy is global?
Yes, white supremacy is global. It is very global. And it's, you see, there's demonstrations in Denmark, there's demonstrations in Amsterdam, Black Lives Matter demonstrations, you know? And Britain, yeah, they're going nuts in Britain right now. And it's like, look, this is not just an American thing, this is international.
And I think they look at the United States and wonder, how is it that cops are killing so many people in the country that's supposed to be this advanced country? In Europe, you don't see nearly anything close to this level of police violence on the streets. I mean, they have other problems, but the police violence, I think Europeans especially look at us like we're so out of our minds.
Well, because I just think that it's just been hidden very well. America's good at hiding things. We're the gatekeeper of secrets, right? So since we're a gatekeeper of secrets, nobody ever knows what's really going on here into the hits the fan, excuse my language, but until it hits the fan, just like with our stock market, just like what's going on in Europe, like all of this is a facade. We don't know what's going on until it hits the fan.
Jasmine, just keep doing what you're doing. I'm so admiring of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sanaa. I love you.
My name is Michael William with Black Lives Matter, Pasadena.
You're here in Los Angeles, not Pasadena, LA City Hall. Why are you here today? Today is Wednesday, the day after the LA police was absolved of killing Riddell Jones.
Right now we're out here to make sure that the killing of Riddell Jones and all the other black folks that have been killed by the LAPD does not go unnoticed anymore, that it just doesn't keep getting rubber stamped and approved of. So we're trying to make a stand and say, look, we're trying to make sure that Chief Charlie Beck, who under his leadership and his tenure has had the most people being killed in the United States by police. So we want to make sure that he is held accountable and that he's fired, because he's obviously not making changes to keep the public safe from the people who are supposed to be protecting them.
Michael, why is this personal for you? I mean, that's an obvious question, but I think it's important for people to get the story of why your life matters. Even though that seems obvious, and yeah. But it's worth still spelling it out, right?
Well, my thing is that anybody that asks me why I do this, I do it for families. I do it for the people that have lost their loved ones. I live two streets down from where Kendrick McDay was killed. So that could have obviously been me at some point in reality.
How old are you, by the way?
23. Kendrick was only 1 year older than me. His birthday is a day before mine. So it literally could have been me. I could have been the person that the police chose to go after that night and eventually kill. So that's why it's personal for me. I also know Anya Slaughter, Marcus, which is Riddell Jones' husband, Miss Hines, Lisa Hines, and Sheila Hines, who are Rakisha's aunt and mother. So I know all these families, and I see the pain that they're going through, and I see the hurt. And I just wanted—I knew if it was my mother, if it was my father, I would want some young man like myself to go and fight for justice for them.
So the solidarity is crucial, but this is our community too, right?
Exactly.
I'm wondering what you make of the really strong backlash that we're seeing now. It seems as though on this third anniversary of Black Lives Matter, as the movement is gaining steam, gaining momentum, and gaining prominence, the backlash is worse than ever. I'm not sure if you heard Rudy Giuliani, former New York mayor's comments recently on CBS's Face the Nation, where he made these, he basically said that black people should be more afraid of, quote, black on black crime than police violence. And it seems as though, and there's also a report that people are demanding Black Lives Matter be named a terrorist organization. Does it feel like the backlash is a measure of the movement's success?
It's funny that Rudy Giuliani has something to say about crime or black on black crime, because his whole broken glass theory was disproven.
And his daughter, I believe, was arrested for shoplifting. But
so it's funny that he has something to say about crime or anything, because what has he done to stop crime? But it is something, because you know when there's you're doing right and you're doing something well, there's always going to be people who want to come in and try to derail what you're trying to do, try to discredit what you're trying to do. But the thing about it is, I always tell people this: the media, the people who are in the power, politicians, they can say whatever they want. We have the backing of the people. If you ask people down here in Skid Row, if you ask people in the hood and in neighborhoods, impoverished neighborhoods, they all love Black Lives Matter, because we love them. And we go to them, and we care about them and their lives, and we don't preference anybody's life over anybody. We're not just here for middle-class black people. We're not just here for affluent or educated black people. We're here for all black people. All black people's lives matter. And they feel that, and they know that. So that's why they care about us, and they move with us, and they agree with us, and they support us. That's why we have people like LA Can, who works with homeless people. That's why a lot of homeless people come in and they enjoy working with us, because they know that we actually care about them, and we're an organization for them, and that we're going to fight for them. So whatever the media wants to say, whatever politicians want to try to make us turn it out and make us seem what it is, I really don't care, because we have the backing of the people.
Were you politically active before Black Lives Matter?
You know, I really wasn't. You know, I was always into politics. I always followed it and tried to know as much as I could, but I really wasn't active or doing things like this until Black Lives Matter, because I really was, I wanted to, but I didn't know how to get involved. And actually Jasmine was the one that first got me involved and started doing things. The first Black Lives Matter interaction I had was at a protest. So I that's the way I've been brought into this.
Has it given your life a whole new direction you didn't predict?
Yeah, I tell people, I'm still in college right now, but I tell people, you know, I'm in college now. I'm not in college to find a career, because I've already found out what I want to do with my life. I'm just in college to better educate myself and get myself better educated, like I said.
Where do you go to college, and what's your major?
I go to Pasadena City College. My major is psychology.
So you foresee this as a lifelong struggle?
I see this as a lifelong struggle. I'm hoping. This is my hope. By the time I'm 30, 35, that there's so much significant changes that I can tell my future, you know, the future people, the kids, I can tell them about a time where there was police, where it's no more. That I could talk about police brutality and police killings and the system that has destroyed black communities. I could talk about that in the past tense. And that's my goal. I'm trying to, by 35 years old, I want to be able to say that. I want to be able to talk about it and not have it be a day-to-day reality for folks.
Well, I hope in a few years I can say the same to my child as well. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's a special report from the streets of downtown Los Angeles, where activists with Black Lives Matter have been camped out since Tuesday after the Los Angeles Police Commission absolved police in the killing of a black woman named Riddell Jones. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.